banged up in last night's game? Or are you a weekend warrior that still thinks you got what it takes to play, but nagging injuries are slowing you down?
It's time to talk to some of the region's top sports medicine specialists. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show.
All you ever wanted to know about sports medicine, and maybe just a little bit more.
Welcome into the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM The Fan. We are live at Kettle Moraine High School, the 11th annual KM Tip-Off Classic. New Berlin West is in the house, just walked in. Boys, what's going on? It's good to see them. My special guest, he's out here with his two boys. Logan and Cam are in the house as well. They are the sons of Eric Pfeifel, Dr. Eric Pfeifel from Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine. You can go to mymosh.com for more information. Eric, it's good to see you.
Great to be back, Mike. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving. Don't eat too much.
No, really? Look at me, pal. Trust me, that's going to happen. The weather changed just like that. Yesterday was 70. Today it's in fact, I was getting on the freeway, and the car ahead of me, he was up a ways, but he did a 180 and hit the wall, and older gentleman, I pulled over, and I said, "You all right?" He said, "Yeah, that scared the heck out of me." And his car was a little messed up, but it was drivable. He said, I'm just going to head home.
It's so, Wisconsin in November. Dog doesn't want to go outside anymore.
No, either do I. So we got something in common. Hey, Green Bay Packers struggling a little bit on the field. Let's talk a little bit about some injuries. They're going to be without T.J. Lang, again, ankle injury. And David Bakhtiari looks like he's going to play with his knee injury, but that ankle with T.J. Lang there – think from what I heard, they're thinking at least another week.
Yeah, you know, certainly anytime you have the guys in the trenches with a difficulty at the ankle, it's pretty tough for them to get back, especially as we get later into the season. The guys are dinged up all over, and when they have ankle sprains and they're trying to push off, they need to give them as much rest as they can. Unfortunately, the Packers are on a three-game losing streak, and any more guys nicked up increases the potential for four.
Yeah, Sunday night at Washington, I'm hoping they turn this thing around. I got a good feeling about this one. Clay Matthews looks like he's, again, game-time decision, but might play this week. That hamstring has just been an issue for him, and I can't stand turning their games on and seeing him in street clothes.
Well, you know, we've talked about this. It sounds like I think every time we've been on the radio this year, and hamstrings are persistent, especially for guys who need burst and quickness like Clay does for his game. And when he isn't able to push those long muscles because they're injured, he's not effective, and they keep him out, hopefully for a run at the end of the season here.
Let's hope so. They're talking Jared Cook might be back. High ankle sprain, beginning of the year, has not played. And they're hoping that he may be back this week, if not this week, probably next week. From what I read, there's a chance, at least an opportunity, for him to maybe see the field Sunday.
Well, even worse than an ankle sprain is those high ankle sprains, because they persist, and especially for bigger guys like Jared Cook, he's going to have a tough time blocking, but also creating some crisp routes. So he hopefully will be back, but they just persist a long time, even longer than regular ankle sprains.
Well, you look at Montgomery, who's out the whole year last year, and he looks good this year, but... Hey, another guy that is going to be in that game, possibly DeSean Jackson, who is a wide receiver with the Redskins. He's had a shoulder problem for a while, and they're talking that he might come back, but they're going to reevaluate his range of motion and take it from there. But at this point, he's in play as a receiver. Right. You know, shoulders, once those get dinged up, you got to make sure they're 100% before you get back.
Absolutely. Well, you know, certainly some guys that play along the line even some running backs who aren't catching a lot of balls out of the backfield can get away with shoulders have diminished motion. Wide receivers and defense backs cannot tolerate the diminished motion because they need to get their arms above their head and make sure they're able to defend or catch balls. And if they don't have that motion, let alone the strength to go with it, they're not going to be there.
We were talking with Dr. Eric Pfeifel from the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Group. You can go to mymosh.com anytime to check out more information on him. He's an Ohio guy, Loves those
Go Buckeyes.
Go Buckeye teams. Be interesting to see what happens on that side.
I'm the biggest Rutgers fan ever today.
Yeah, Rutgers has no shot. I'm just giving you. I'm going to give you. In fact, I'll predict that one early on. Hey, getting back to the NFL, just a couple other players I want to talk to you about. Rob Gronkowski, tight end with New England, perforated lung.
Oh boy, yeah. You know this collision sport. You know, anytime guys take hits to the torso. In hockey, in football, you can get injuries to the ribs, and the ribs are there for a reason. They are a cage to protect the heart and the lungs, and sometimes they fail. And when they break, sometimes they will puncture those lung sacs and create a significant problem. And this is where we start getting into the dangerous zone. These are life-threatening type injuries
wow.
if these persist. So, yeah, pretty impressive that he finished the game. It must have been a very small perforated lung or pneumothorax. But this is going to be a bit, and they're going to have to take a while to clear him.
What do you do for that? Just rest?
So a lot of it is rest. The rib fractures are typically self-limiting based on healing, but they also have to allow the lung and the lung sacs to basically heal and resolve to a normal state before they can put him in a position where he can get hit again. He's a big guy, but if he gets hit again in the same spot, it could potentially become a very significantly life-threatening injury.
And that's not an injury where anybody can say, look, you're a football player. Be tough. Rub some dirt on it. That is not what we're talking about here.
Ain't no dirt to rub on that one.
No. There ain't no dirt to rub on that one. Do you think that he'll be back? What timetable, and you don't know this for sure, obviously, because you're not his doctor, but is it a 2 week? Is it a 6 week?
I would bet, based on their findings, they're going to have to let the lung injury resolve, which is probably a 2 to 3 week. They're going to have to make sure that his ribs are stable. And most likely a 4 to 6 week would be my guess. Now, this is Gronk, so maybe he'll be back earlier. They oftentimes will put flak jackets on guys to diminish the injuries. But this is significant, and the Patriots are going to be without him for a while.
Well, you know what quarterback I have, so you know that. And I've lost three in a row, so I don't need to have Brady not have Gronk. But
he'll find someone else on the car sales or something.
He will. There's no doubt he will. Hey, let's talk a little bit about Tony Romo. He's coming back now with that back. And did you hear his press conference at all?
What a class act.
That's a Wisconsin boy right
yeah.
there.
Hey, straight out of Burlington.
Straight out of Burlington. And, you know, all these people talking. And he said, hold on. There's no issue. That's our starting quarterback. I'm going to back him up. And we're going to keep rolling.
Well, young athletes can learn a lot from this. They can learn that you got to stay healthy. When you're in a position where you don't like what's going on, you don't speak out about it or yell about it or protest
right.
about it. You stand up, you take it, and you deal with it. And he is great. This is one of the tough parts about professional sports is transition, especially with age and injury.
Right. Well, I agree with you. And you know, if he were to do the opposite, stand up and say, look, that's my job. And I'm the starting quarterback here in Dallas. And I can see some guys in the league doing that. But I was really happy to see the class that he took with this. And
I'll tell you what, it's unwritten. Everyone knows he wants that job back.
Yes.
You don't have to say it. But
right.
if he says the other things to go along with that he wants that job back, he is a class act and a great athlete.
You know, the interesting part is when they went in the locker room and they talked to some players, Dez Bryant, they talked to Prescott. And they say, were you surprised? And they're like, no, not at all. It's Tony Romo. That's exactly what he's been saying for 4 weeks. Why do you guys keep talking about this?
Because we sometimes have too much to talk about, and we put words into people's mouths.
No doubt. Let's talk about some NBA injuries. We're going to get we got a couple minutes left in this segment. Jay Crowder, a couple guys that we have some interest here in some different injuries. Jay Crowder with the Warriors, with the Celtics. He's got a bum ankle, and when you're a player like him that plays really hard on the defensive end, gets up and down the floor, and not only ankles in the NBA, but in the high school basketball, and we'll talk about Greedo Martin Luther because we've got some ankle issues as well. But looking through the NBA injury report, a lot of ankles.
Yeah, you know, certainly, just like football, ankle injuries are a significant problem in basketball, to the point that the majority of teams do taping or bracing to try to prevent these type of injuries. But when you get to the collegiate and professional level, it's even worse because these guys are bigger, they're a little bit older, so their tissue is less tolerant. And they also are playing against competition that are much quicker and faster. And basketball is such a lateral transition game from offense to defense and side to side. Pivoting off the ankle is very important. When you have injury, it really diminishes the capacity.
Dr. Pifel, the other, looking at the injury report, and you know, I only do this, I look at the injury report because I'm doing this show. And I want some things to talk about. And there's a couple of things that jumped out at me. One, there was a lot of guys out with concussion. And I didn't realize how many.
Oh, yeah. Well, remember, basketball is not a collision sport, but it is a high-contact sport. And it's a high-contact sport played on a hard surface. So when you have big bodies, lots of contact, and a hard surface, the probability of head injuries is significant, and that includes concussion.
Yeah, I was surprised. Doug McDermott is out with a concussion. Al Horford. There was a lot of guys. Another one that jumped out that I haven't really heard a lot about, but guys with toe injuries. And you know, in that sport, you're either, because you're utilizing your feet, so you're either somebody getting stepped on or they do something to their toe. Devin Harris. He saw a specialist on Monday, and he was now cleared to shed his walking boot. So, you know, if you get a toe injury, especially to the big toe.
Right. So, unlike football that typically played is on a softer surface, basketball is on a hard surface. These guys are big. They're long. The majority of NBA players have significantly larger and longer feet, so they have higher stresses across these bones. And when they play 80 games a year, have all the practice to go with it, half of them are playing summer leagues or playing in the Olympics, that's a lot of exposure to repetitive injury, and you get stress fractures and irritability along the feet, which, in just like the ankle, if you can't transition, you can't play.
Hey, a couple of other ones. Draymond Green, he left the game in the middle of the week in the first quarter. He rolled his ankle, and he returned midway through the second after receiving treatment and having his ankle retaped. When they say he went to the locker room, had treatment, what are they talking about?
I can't tell you. I wasn't there for sure.
But right.
Typically when you talk about treatments, they'll talk about a quick cryo or ice therapy. Oftentimes they'll do some electric stim. They'll do some compression therapy and then retape, rebrace, because the tape will lose some of its strength throughout the game. Hopefully they're not talking about local anesthetic or numbing medicines. That's not utilized very often anymore, especially
right.
A player of his caliber in a early season game. But most likely some of those other treatments.
Hey, another question for you from the Portland Trailblazers, Festus Mazzilia. It said he's not going to take their road trip. He's got a knee issue, and he's seeking another medical opinion on his injury. And I'm wondering how common something like that is. So they've got their team doctor with the Trailblazers, and he tells them what he sees with the knee. And how often do you think that people, not only NBA players, but people go to get a second opinion?
I would tell you almost 100% of professional athletes at the NBA, NFL caliber will have at least another opinion, either by phone or by video conference, because the majority of them don't get their treatment from the provider for the team. The majority of them get treatment based on who their agent is
okay.
and who they have best interactions with. So a lot of the agents will guide them to physicians. And not that the physicians of the NBA team aren't good, but oftentimes it gives, at least the second opinion is based on where their agent suggests.
Boy, that's surprising. So, and if there's going to be surgery, do they normally go with the doctor that you know, the doctor of the team, or they go with their own guy?
It really depends on the comfort with the team physician. So oftentimes it's how long they've been at that site with that team, the interactions with the player, but also the agent's comfort with that team's physician.
Hey, last question before we get to a break. Lance Thomas from the Knicks, he's battling a bone bruise on his left ankle. So, you know, you hear somebody who sprains the ankle, That's a bone bruise on it?
So when you have sprains, it's an injury to the soft tissues. When you get bruising, it is the soft tissue swelling within the bone. And the bone is a solid structure. When you get swelling in it, that bruising will last a long time, unlike a bruise in your leg. They're very painful and sometimes can take months to improve as far as symptomatology, but also on the imaging. So these can be very difficult. So high energy sprains oftentimes have bone bruising, and that prolongs the recovery for those athletes.
Wow. Hey, we're going to get to a break. Other side of the break, we're going to talk about an issue that's going on with athletes in the NBA that I want to ask your opinion
on. And I'm
going
to applaud it. It's great.
Well, there we go. Yeah, so you got to listen to what it is. On the other side of the break, we'll continue our conversation with Dr. Eric Pfeifel, along with Cam and Logan sitting over there playing cards, good-looking Pfeifel boys. In fact, Logan has got two games today at Brookfield Academy. Hopefully he'll knock down a couple jumpers, play a little defense, and rebound a little bit. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
They're playing basketball. We love that basketball. They're playing basketball. We love that basketball.
Welcome back to the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show. It's Basketball by Curtis Blow. And it's brought to you by my special guest, Dr. Eric Pfeifel. Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine, great song.
That's like old school basketball with the shorty shorts and high socks.
Yeah, man, I look good. No, maybe not. I didn't look good back then. Hey, let's talk about something going on, and it started a while back in the NBA, but it's different now, and I know you applaud it, but Brooke Lopez with the Nets, LeBron James with your Cleveland Cavaliers, took off games this week to rest. And I knew we were going to talk about this, so I pulled an article from April 12, 2016, and I have to quote Kevin McHale. He said, "This rest stuff drives me crazy. You're playing basketball for a living, okay? I understand if you work in a coal mine that you may need a rest day, but you're playing basketball. The joy that comes from competing in basketball, it's fun to play. I never got tired in the game. How can you get tired in this game? You're playing basketball. I just don't understand this."
Well, I think my rebuttal to Mr. McHale would be, well, how is your back? How are your knees? And how are your hips? This is a gentleman that played through the tough years of the NBA, never took time off, but also had different training schedules. Also didn't play through the Olympics all through his career, only at the end of his career because of the transition of the Olympics to professional athletes. And it's very unfair for him to judge based on what he did. These athletes need rest. I tell my athletes in high school and college, they need rest. They need transition. And we're not allowing these professionals to rest. This is fantastic. This is how we're going to keep our superstars for 10 to 15 years instead of 5 to 10 years, especially guys that are huge like Brooke Lopez and LeBron James. These guys need some time off.
You know, it's interesting because the Golden State last year decided to go for the record. And they didn't rest people down the stretch, and they broke the record, didn't win the title. And the Cavaliers, I think you remember that. They were tired.
Golden State was tired at the end of that series. And it may not have been due to them trying for the record wins. But you know what? It's not going to be remembered in 5 years. Who has the most wins in the regular season?
Right.
They're going to remember that the Cavs came back and won.
The only time you talk about it is when somebody starts getting close to it.
Right.
And to be honest with you, I didn't remember Chicago had that record.
Yeah, they don't get a ring for that.
They do not. They do not. And your feeling is, even at the high school level, as far as rest, because we go at it, you know, this is the first week of practice, and we go at it pretty good. I think at Martin Luther with Coach Wallersheim, who's been around a long time, he says, look, we really understand that we're going to go hard one day, and then we're going to get a lot of shots up the next day, and we're going to go hard, and we'll get after it. But I can tell you that he has his year lined up, and he knows that come February, we're gonna really slow it down a little bit. We're gonna get more shots up than we are going to be running line drills.
It's a great idea, and you got to remember, this is a 20 to 30 game season in high school. No back-to-backs or very few back-to-backs. You have kids that aren't playing year-round for the most part, and you also don't have all the travel that the professionals have. I mean, these guys have back-to-backs, have five-game swings on the road. They're also 10 to 15 years older, and their right. bodies just don't bounce back. So I think rest is important in high school. It's not quite as intense as it is in the NBA or the collegiate level. So I think rest is important in the offseason or with injury or as you're getting towards the end of the season and kind of getting ready for the playoffs, but certainly not to the same extent of the NBA.
Can, our guys in this tournament, this classic, in fact, we're out at Kettle Moraine High School today. There's like 26 teams out here throughout the day. It's $5 to get in. So if you've been jonesing for high school basketball, come out to Kettle Moraine High School, the 11th annual Kettle Moraine tip-off classic, and there's games going on all day long. So come on out. We're, as soon as you walk in, I'm going to be here on the air till noon, and come out and say hello. But you walk through, there's four or five games with teams everywhere, and it's
great, you know, way to spend a cold Saturday in Wisconsin.
It's beautiful. But they're, like today, Greendale Martin Luther, we go back-to-back-to-back. So we go three in a row. And we started talking to our kids on Tuesday about making sure that they hydrate, making sure, because we had some guys cramping up last year. And Dr. Pfeifel, there is this thing with kids this age that they don't think they need that. And they think, well, once I feel a cramp coming out, I'll just drink some water. It's 2 days before, right?
Right. You know, certainly it's getting the hydration in ahead of time. It's getting the nutrition in ahead of time, because nutrition and electrolytes is as important as the hydration. And that's where we try to come in as Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine, is to help educate some of the teams around the area. That's why we're here on the radio, because we want our athletes to do well. We don't want to talk about injury. We want to talk about success stories. So,
when you come into a place like this and teams walk by and you'll see some guys in street clothes. In fact, if you're here a little later, you'll see a number of the Greendale Martin Luther Spartans in street clothes. And we're going to talk about that in the third segment. These are kids that a lot of these kids play multiple sports, so they're coming from football and they're going to play basketball, and it's a whole different animal.
Yeah, transition, especially for high school athletes, is very difficult, because you're going from a field sport for the majority of athletes, either going from soccer or football to basketball, and even some guys this time of year are transitioning to wrestling, where these are significantly different sports. They're on a hard surface, they're grappling like wrestling, or they're pounding their feet like basketball. And we see a lot of different types of injuries, including stress injuries in basketball and stress fractures in the shins and feet. We also see kids who get overheated because they're used to playing outdoors, and then they come indoors and they have not acclimated. They've not hydrated ahead of time. So the heat injuries and cramping is much more common in that transition, because the weather is significantly different in a climate-controlled environment.
We used to talk about football players that came to play basketball, especially, you know, you think about teams like Catholic Memorial and Franklin that played yesterday.
Yeah, big shout-out to all those teams, including Brookfield East.
Brookfield East.
Great run, boys.
Man, that's awesome. Coach Farley, first-year coach.
Fantastic.
I had him on the show last week, and I said, look, you got to understand that not many teams other than Kimberly, you know, this isn't an every-year occurrence. He said, well, we'll see about that.
Let's keep it going. The great run for all those teams. Very, very excited.
But those kids still coming off, especially when you get deep into the playoffs in football, and then they try to get over to basketball. I used to say they had their football legs for a while, because it's just different.
Oh, yeah. Football is a strength sport that is stop-start, and it is not constant. All right? So you have the ability to rest. You have the ability to reset. Basketball is a continuous sport, except for breaks intermittently. And when you have that, you need a different type of endurance that the football players don't have immediately. So that transition is difficult for multiple sport athletes. But that doesn't say you should not play multiple sports. Play multiple sports.
Well, I know that you believe that, because I talked to Cam and Logan. Cam Pfeifel, who's 9, and Logan Pfeifel, who's 11. And they looked me, hey, congratulations, by the way. They looked me straight in the eye, shake my hand. These are really nice young men.
Right.
But Cam said, look, I love all, I can't tell you what my favorite sport is, because I play a lot of them. And not only that, I'm the lead in the school play. That's awesome, isn't it?
It's and we've harped on this before.
Simba.
But having kids do multiple things, including multiple sports early, is a good way to have them find a passion when they mature and get to high school and college.
I think that's awesome. Yeah, you've done a great job, and we've talked about our families a lot of times, and this is the first time I've gotten a chance to meet Logan and Cam, and congratulations on that. I love when a young man that's 11, a young man that's 9, they'll get up and look you in the eye and shake your hand. Hey, on the other side of the break, Dr. Pfeiffer, we're going to talk about common basketball injuries, and we'll start kind of talking a little bit about what the common ones are, and I'll tell you about this MASH unit that we have over, in fact, in Greendale Martin Luther, it is a MASH school.
Yes.
So Dr. Pennington, and we just, it's a great group that we have, but we're keeping you guys busy. We'll get to a break. We are live at Kettle Moraine High School. It's the 11th annual Kettle Moraine Tip-Off Classic. You want to see some high school basketball, $5 gets you in for the entire day. Come on out and say hello. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
All my friends are heathens, take it slow. Wait for them to ask you who you know. Please don't make any sense.
Welcome back to the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. Heathens, 21 Pilots.
Straight out of Columbus, Ohio.
Straight, I figured that. Either that or you were saying something about me, I don't know. Straight out of Columbus, Ohio, we are live from Kettle Moraine High School. This is the 11th annual KM Tip-Off Classic. I'm going to be doing the show here till noon. After the Midwest Orthopedic Show, we're going to be doing the Wendy's Varsity Blitz High School Basketball Coaches Show for the first time this year. And should be a lot of fun. Hey, I was telling you before the break that we are keeping your group busy at Martin Luther. Ashley Groh is she's our
great
trainer.
Job. Great
oh my
part
goodness!
Of MASH Sports. So thanks to her, but we would prefer our trainers and doctors to be very bored and watching sports than taking care of injuries.
She said to me that two nights ago, I walked in her room and she had two guys, and it was the middle of practice, and she just started laughing. She said, I can't believe how busy I am right now. And I said, Ashley, you're the best. She really is good.
Yeah. You know,
she cares so much about these kids, Dr. Pfeiffer. I mean, she does really generally care about these kids.
It's a very important thing to find a trainer and a therapist and a physician team to take care of your athletes because you have to have someone with passion.
And she definitely has that. Hey, let's talk a little bit about basketball injuries. I pulled an article that talks about the 5 most common basketball injuries. And, I don't think any of them really surprised me, but there's enough to talk about with these. Number one is foot and ankle. And if I pull the 5 most common football injuries, they would be totally different than what we see. But foot and ankle injuries when it comes to basketball are by far the most common?
Absolutely. And it's because of the size of the athlete on average, because of their height, what they do, jumping, but also running and quick transition without a lot of rest, but also the surface they play on, the hard surface, like we've talked about. Forgiving surfaces like field turf and grass diminish the risk to injuries of the foot and ankle. They do not eliminate them, but when you get on a hard court like basketball or even in volleyball, that's where you have a lot of these foot and ankle injuries being predominant.
The other thing is shoes. You know, and when you talk about prevention and you talk about trying to prevent ankle and foot injuries, there are so many different options when it comes to basketball shoes. And it's funny because I was talking to the Grafton basketball coach before we went on the air today. And he said, how's your team? And I said, we've been dealing with some ankle injuries. And he said, Coach, have you ever seen more players wearing low tops to play basketball? And I said, it's really getting to be more common. And like if you look across here to the Watertown basketball team that's sitting in front of us, That high top basketball shoe is just not as common as it used to be.
Yeah, I would tell you that there's been a lot of studies in both the training, therapy, and medical journals of high tops versus low tops versus mid highs, and there's not a lot of difference in injury patterns.
Oh, there's not.
No.
Okay.
There is some high top to low top, but not enough to say that you should be doing this. The different the patterns are changed when you are doing taping, when you're doing preventive bracing, even in patients who have not had any type of ankle injuries. So unless you're doing those type of modalities, but also a preseason ankle strengthening program, the shoe wear is not that significant in comparison to those other treatments.
Well, Ashley has talked to us about ankle, how to strengthen ankles and exercising the ankle. And we have a number of guys that are doing those exercises probably as we speak, to be honest with you.
It's a very simple program. It just needs to be taught, but it also has to be adhered to. And when you have teenage athletes, they have a lot of other things going on, like schoolwork, managing social media, managing their friends and significant others. So, you know, getting them to do something that is to prevent injury is hard.
So foot and ankle is number one. Number two is hip and thigh injuries. And when it comes to basketball injuries, we're talking about pivoting, running, jumping, rebounding, all place strain on the legs and the hips. Any surprise to you on that?
You know, certainly you're talking about long athletes when you're coming talking about basketball. So the quad tendons and muscles, the hamstrings are all going to be injured because they're running. They have a significant amount of soft tissue that can potentially be injured, but also they're jumping, running, and transitioning in a high-energy environment. So these are the type of injuries you're going to see. Plus, basketball, especially as you get to higher levels, is a collision sport.
It is.
Collisions, you get knees to the quad, knee to the hamstring. These are areas that are very significantly irritated with these collisions, but then the acceleration and leaping.
Any way to prevent that when you talk about stretching and making sure that you get stretched, there are certain injuries that you can't really prevent because, again, it's a collision sport at times, a lot of contact. But the more flexible you are, your muscles and tendons, less likely to be injured?
Certainly. And in recent years, there's been a path away from the static stretching, the
right.
runner stretch and things that we have done in the past to a workout that basically creates a stretching while doing something active called dynamic stretching. And the majority of teams do this when it comes to prevention before sports. My kids' soccer teams at single-digit ages are doing it. And now as we get to higher levels, those are a big part of prevention, especially the long muscles, hamstrings, and quads.
Yeah, that day of as a basketball team, to start your practice, you just, you know, you get to find the wall, stretch your calves, you know, that's kind of gone. And the way we do it, and I think a lot of teams do it, is we'll have them do a drill or two just to get the body moving, and then we'll have them go about their warm-up,
yeah.
And I think that's important.
I think the studies have shown that a dynamic warm-up at the beginning is much more effective in injury prevention on a whole. There are certain injuries that still have some improvement with static, and static stretching is actually helpful in after injury, and there is some studies showing that static stretching after a competition can help to stretch out some of those inflamed tissues.
So that's number two. So the first common is foot and ankle in basketball injuries. Second is hip thigh injuries. Three is knee injuries. And it seems like the knee injury is always more severe than anything else. When you talk about ACL or torn meniscus, it seems like when you talk about a knee injury as a coach and as a parent, when my son Matthew played, that was always my biggest fear.
Well, there's a lot of reasons for that. And knee injuries, if you take all sports, are probably the most common. But in transitioning football, basketball, baseball, there are going to be other injuries that are more prevalent in those sports. But knees are more common to be injured and oftentimes more common to have surgery because some of the structures of the knee have very poor blood supply. The meniscus, the ACL have very poor blood supply. So if you have an injury and the knee is a transition zone between the feet, which provide propulsion or transition, and the rest of the body, those things get injured, but the ACL and the meniscus oftentimes need surgery because they don't heal on their own, unlike an ankle sprain, which will, unlike a quad tendon or a hamstring tendon, oftentimes which will repair on their own because their blood supply is so good.
Dr. Pryfield, so let's get to a break. Other side of the break, we'll get to 4 and 5, which is wrist and hand injuries, and then head and face injuries in basketball. And we'll talk to Dr. Eric Pryfield about that on the other side of the break. Again, for more information on Dr. Pryfield, go to mymosh.com. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Quite as much anymore.
Not as much. That's Lightning Bolt by Pearl Jam, brought to you by Dr. Eric Pryfield. You can go to mymosh.com. We are live out at the Kettle Moraine 11th annual. Boy, I remember when this thing started. 11th annual. I am getting old. It is the KM Tip-Off Classic. If you've been looking for high school basketball to start, come on out. $5 gets you in for the whole day, and you can watch a lot of high school basketball. We're talking about common basketball injuries, and we went through the first three, the foot and ankle injuries, hip and thigh injuries, knee injuries. Number four is wrist and hand injuries. And it says here it's actually surprising that there aren't more common with the hand and the wrist because, you know, basketball, there's a lot of jammed fingers. When you're playing defense, a lot of times with your hand, there just isn't as many as I think that these guys would think there would be, but only 11% of basketball injuries occur to the hand, wrist, or forearm.
Yeah, you know, I think it's probably underreported because the majority of hand injuries, injuries of nail, sprains, can be managed without any significant treatment other than icing, buddy taping, those type of things. And I would say that significant hand and wrist injuries are probably 11% of the time. But if you look on any given day on an NBA or collegiate court, you're going to see tape on guys' fingers, and I would say probably over 11% of the time. So I think it's probably significant injuries because, as you would guess, hand injuries from a ball landing on it, from getting caught on a jersey, for going up for a rebound, these type of things are going to be very prevalent.
You know, and you talk about prevention, and I thought this was spot on. Be sure to look the ball right into your hands if someone passes it to you. And, you know, as a third-grade basketball coach, you're telling kids, look the ball right into your hands, look the ball right in your hands. And then they talk a little bit about keeping your eye on a court for other players, making sure that you're trying to keep your hand out of their jersey because you can jam it that way.
Yeah, you know, and certainly for the younger players and the guys coming up through high school, that's very important. But as guys transition, they're trying to get an edge on speed. So part of that speed game is anticipation where the ball will be so they can start their move. And a lot of times there is slight misses and the hands get in the way.
Hey, the fifth most common basketball injury is to the head and to the face. And it's interesting because as a basketball coach, and knock on wood, I don't see a lot of that, but it's more common than I think.
Yeah, you know, it's a fairly significant injury. As we've been talking with all the collision sports and football and hockey, concussions very, very probable to occur to a basketball player during their career because of the hard court and the pounding. But facial injuries because of elbows flying, guys diving on the court after balls, the face is exposed. And unlike football where they have a face guard, they're going to have direct contact. And oftentimes we'll see facial fractures or orbital fractures around the eyeball. And these two or three players a year in the NBA are running with face guards. And that's to diminish some of the risk after injury.
You know what's interesting is as I did research on this, they talked about 60% of injuries occur in the second half of games, and suggesting that fatigue is a big part, correct?
Fatigue is a huge part of all injuries. So if you look at any type of event, if you look at marathons, if you look at soccer players in the second half, if you look at the second half of an NFL season, when you are asking an athlete to do the same thing over and over again, they're going to fatigue over an event or over a season. And so injuries are typically going to occur at the end of the season. If you ask skiers, it's usually the seventh or eighth run down a mountain where they have an injury, not the first few, because they have fatigued and not trained enough for endurance.
So as a coach, when you take into consideration that you know we have the capability of having these guys go pretty hard day after day after day, or you know going hard one day or 2 days and then going easy and letting their bodies kind of recoup a little bit. If you're recommending to a high school basketball coach, you don't go hard every day, correct?
No, I think that you have to have some type of reprieve, just like you would in football, where you have a day in which you are full contact, day where it is a walkthrough. Basketball should be the same. Consider going hard and doing scrimmaging one day, working on set plays the next day, doing a light day of walking through some of the set plays before a game. Those are very reasonable ways to continue to train for basketball without fatiguing the body.
Dr. Pfeifel, if you know, there are some tournaments that are coming up, you know, holiday tournaments, and there are teams like at Greendale Martin Luther, we're asked to play in the WBY shootout, and the two games that we play are 9 a.m. games. And so is it important for us to try to get maybe an early morning practice or two prior to that, or do these kids, you know, get them up out of bed a little bit earlier than normal?
Well, you know, certainly I think like any athletes, they have routine. So just like NFL teams that are flying from the East Coast to the West Coast and transitioning time zones, I think if you're transitioning the typical time of play, some athletes will thrive in the morning and not at night. So if you get your athletes accustomed to that, the hard part is how long does that take? I mean, maybe a couple days may be okay. A week probably will get you there, but I don't know if that's probable with a high school schedule.
Yeah, for a 9 a.m. And we try to get these kids to eat 3 hours before a game. So you're telling them to get up at 5:30, get in the shower.
Good luck on that.
And eat at 6. It's going to be almost impossible with some of these kids. I can do it. I'm up that early, you know, but kind of hard for those guys to do it. With this time of year, what are you seeing most? Are you still seeing guys that were injured in football, or are you starting to see some basketball boys?
So we're starting to see the basketball injuries, a lot of them with transition.
Right.
As we talked, guys that are going from their outdoor to indoor legs. We're still seeing some stress changes as guys get into basketball and are really ramping up their training. So guys getting some shin splints. Some getting some abnormal wear patterns because they're now transitioning to basketball shoes or newer shoes. So even blisters and calluses, these type of things bother athletes.
Yes.
And they're minor, but for a running, twisting athlete, skin injuries to the feet can be very difficult.
Doctor, do you see more injuries from girls, the girls' side to the boys' side? We've talked about this before, that there are some injuries that girls probably get more than boys. And this time of year, do you see more girl basketball players and athletes?
In the female athletes, we see a lot more knee injuries than the male athletes. And that's true across all combined sports. So basketball, soccer, these type of sports have more prevalence towards ACL injuries.
Hey, boys, thanks for coming out here.
Hey, great. Hey, and I wanted to plug the Wave. Wave plays tonight, 6 o'clock downtown.
There you go.
Come and support them. I'll be there with them.
That was so fun to have their head coach with us a couple weeks ago. What a nice man he is.
That's great.
Yeah, that's a good organization. Thanks for bringing Cam and Logan.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, nice young men. Happy Thanksgiving to you and your family.
Happy Thanksgiving, Mike.
He's Dr. Eric Pfeifel. You can go to mymosh.com for more information. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.